Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. Today we're going to be covering three important topics from this past week's news across your news feeds this past Thanksgiving week in the U.S. We'll be investigating two or three different articles that have proposed some important strategies to deal with our current international student recruitment woes in the United States, and we'll be presenting some of my thoughts on those in just a moment as we get started. So for those who are not familiar with the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup, it's one of the offerings from my company, Social Media and International Education Consulting. My name is Marty Bennett. Been in international education about 25 years now, and I am now taking the time each week to share my thoughts on how some of the issues of our day can be interpreted and hopefully applied to improving how institutions and organizations do international, particularly as it relates to international students coming to this country. So I'm thanking you again for joining me today. We'll be covering these three topics for the next 30 minutes or so, and we'll do this each Wednesday. This edition of as are all past podcasts, midweek roundups are available not only on our Facebook page and the video archives, but also on our YouTube channel. I have a playlist for these promos, for these playlists for midweek roundup, and we also have begun podcasting these midweek roundups available on all major podcasting streams. So encourage you to get connected one way or another with this content each week. We'll share some of that information on how you can do that a little bit later on at the end of this session. So thanks again for joining me. We're going to start today with an interesting interview I saw done last week, actually maybe a week and a half ago now with the holiday break. It was with a visiting dean of engineering from Tufts University. It was in the Jakarta Post, and it was interviewing him on just various topics related to U.S. institutions enrolling international students. So interesting to see what he had to say. And for those who have been recruiting in the last couple of years out overseas, you know, or even fielded emails from prospective students and or parents, you have heard the questions that kind of make you cringe, that kind of make you go, oh my goodness, I've never had these asked before of me. How do I deal with this question? So this professor, now dean of the College of School of Engineering at Tufts University, he was asked a variety of questions. The first one, of course, being, did the election of President Donald Trump give you a hard time in promoting U.S. education abroad? And I find it interesting that the dean references that there have not been any real policy changes that are putting more hurdles or obstacles for students to go to the United States. That's his wording. But if he makes the point that if anything, many universities, this is his quote, many universities basically are making an extra effort to make it easier for the students to come to their universities to study. So I think he makes the admission that the political rhetoric does not help from D.C., but does we are not in terms of giving the unwelcoming atmosphere that we've talked about in many previous podcasts here and editions of this midweek roundup. So at Tufts, obviously a fairly well-known school, not perhaps top tier, but certainly well up there and well-known. They have not had, according to this dean, not had problems when it comes to visas for their students. They had some students that were away that couldn't get back in initially when the initial visa bans were put in place, but then those problems were resolved. And he does admit that this had a psychological effect on the way prospective audiences, international audiences, were pursuing international students or not. So there may be future policy changes, he admits, but he doesn't see that coming soon because of the value, frankly, that international students have on U.S. college campuses, and that how important that is to building a diverse student population, and what that can do to help inform and educate all students about the world around there. So, the question I think reflects a lot of fears that we get about the United States. There's also addressing safety concerns, and perhaps not necessarily in this article, but we've seen this before, that questions of safety, will my child be safe in the United States on your college campus? 10, 15 years ago, that might have been just an issue of whether there are high crime rates in and around the college campus, wherever that might be. But now it's more of a question of, is my child going to be safe because he or she is an international student that is perhaps considered not the ordinary at that particular institution? So I think that those questions, I know there have been other articles that have referenced how recruiters at fairs who get these questions about why should my son or daughter come to the United States, those aren't necessarily questions we got 10, 15 years ago in the field, that now being asked that to justify why the United States is still a preeminent destination for international students. I think those are the ones that this professor makes the case that it's the international students are still greatly valued, that the universities are doing everything they can to welcome them. And those points are certainly very well taken and need to be foundational for any response to international students and parents about their son or daughter coming to the United States to study. And you can address the issues of how your campus welcomes students, what services you have in place, and that's obviously something we'll talk about a little bit later on, about the value of those services that you have for international students. But I think what's really critical here for when facing these issues of it's no longer just, is your school the right place for my son or daughter? You may not even get to that question until you can answer effectively and to the satisfaction of the parents or the student, is the United States still a good place for international students? And the answers to those questions are going to be very different than what you might answer for your individual campus. So I think, and this will be something I'll address in future blogs that I write for various outlets, is how our messaging needs to change as U.S. institutions in this not only ever competitive global marketplace for international students, but also to address the concerns of parents and students around the world about the United States as a destination market. That needing to be answered first before you even get to your individual institution's information. So something to keep in the back of your heads as you answer questions or formulate how you want to answer these questions in not only face-to-face communications at events that you might have with students and parents, but also thinking about it in relation to how are you going to respond in communications, with email communications, other video communication you might have with prospective student audiences, live chats that you might do for prospective students and parents. How are you going to address these issues of what the United States is like as an environment for international students, not just what your campus does. So just things to think about as you go through and understand the various layers of student questions about studying in the United States these days. They are different, and it's important that we recognize this as we go through our jobs every day. Now, one other related piece, and this we'll touch on the second article that we'll talk about today. It's actually a well-done piece by a service provider that actually works with international students and study abroad folks on student insurance. Luremark is the company name. But they've done a very good job in outlining in a series of blog pieces, fifth of a six-part weekly series highlighting model practices of international student offices. I think this is perhaps the biggest disconnect that U.S. institutions have when it comes to international student enrollment recruitment, is that recruiting students and enrolling students and keeping students are very different prospects, but are all connected. And this is something that I think we all need to think about in what we do in our day-to-day jobs, but how we talk about what we do and how engaging we are with the rest of our campus communities in what we do related to international student services. And how we talk about that, not only to prospective student audiences, but on our campuses about the value of these students, about how it is not just the International Office's responsibility to help these students have a productive experience on our college campuses. It is every office's responsibility. When we look at the parts of a student's experience on a university campus, to say that only, for example, if you were a commuter student and you perhaps didn't live in the residence halls, but you were attending university or college, would thus the Commuter Student Association or Commuter Student Office be the only office on that campus responsible for the health and safety and well-being of those students while they're there? Of course not. That would be ridiculous. Why do we do the same when it comes to international students? And I think that's something that trying to impose that model that, the International Office will take care of it. That's clearly failing our students if that's the approach your institution takes. It should be the International Student Office that takes a lead on engaging and involving a variety of different campus offices in how international students are treated and what services they have, what needs they have in relation to what that office might do. And I think that's the piece that I think so many universities are falling short on, and perhaps lose students in the longer term through retention efforts that fall short from including all of the various offices that need to be involved with international student life on campus. So the Lure article makes the case there are four basic areas that student offices, international student offices, need to make sure are an important piece of the puzzle for an international student journey through institutions. One is a dedicated and diverse orientation team. Two, support structures built into the operations of international student life throughout their time on campus. Three, specialized health insurance plans. Not surprising given that Lure Mark does student insurance, but I'll talk more about that in a minute. And then four, removal of negative administrative policies and processes. And I can't tell you on the institutions I've worked at in the past when I've run across, why do international students get treated so differently in terms of a process? Why do they charge this fee when domestic students don't have to pay that fee? So I've gone through, when I found out these kind of administrative roadblocks or hurdles, extra hurdles that international students have to overcome just to be students, after they've enrolled, are some of the more unnerving, to say the least, in terms of how some international students' experiences can be tainted by a lack of a feeling of I'm being treated like any other student. Even though I'm different, but I'm being treated fairly by every office on campus. So I think that those are four elements that are important. Orientation, obviously, for those students when they first get to your campus, in terms of who's picking them up at the airport if that's offered, who's leading their orientation activities, who's providing support for them once they're on campus. During those initial first few days, are you doing trips to the area stores to stock up on clothing, particularly winter clothing if you're starting in January? That was always a fun time for me when I was at institutions that had January intakes about students not coming prepared with the right kind of winter clothes for a January orientation. But having the right kind of support people in place to cover all the various eventualities that students are going to face in those first few days while they're on campus. So the Lure article, again, does a really good job of outlining in those four areas. Not saying those are the only four that you need to worry about they certainly cover a lot of other ground in their other articles. But the issue of support structures built into operations, and that's kind of into the operations for all the offices that deal with international students. Multicultural dining options. Diet is a big challenge for new international students, particularly undergrads that might have to live in the residence halls. What kind of options do they have in the residence halls? Are they truly providing the range of food that that they need? Are there other trips, transportation to area stores if they aren't if there isn't a bus system in town that gets students easily to and from those places for international students? Are there classes, international student classes, like continuing orientation classes that are offered to help with the adaptation to American community, American campus life, and also classroom life, which are very different than almost everywhere else in the world? Are there monthly events for them, coffee hours, conversation partners, those kind of programming pieces that can be important support structures for international students? Do you have those in place? And if not, what can you do to start that process of kind of re-engaging and having continual check-ins with your students available during the course of an academic year? And then also during the breaks, so what are you doing for them? Do you have year-round housing for undergraduates available? Particularly grad students aren't going to be going home usually in between their semesters or degree years. So thinking about those kind of options is important. They talk about health insurance in the lower article as well. And frankly, I came into my most recent institution when I first arrived there. There was no requirement that for international students to have health insurance. And that was one of my responsibilities in my first year, was to really set up the infrastructure for health insurance to be required of all international students, and to have a legitimate plan options in place for those students when they first arrived on campus, because our health system, love it or hate it, in the United States is very different than anywhere in the world, and it's very costly, and particularly if you do not have insurance. And having something in place was mission critical for our institution, and that was deemed a priority that international students would now be required to have health insurance. And have health insurance plans that make sense, that are convenient and easily accessible, and then have are really tailored to their needs. So important pieces of the puzzle. So really glad to see that lower article, frankly. And Catherine, thanks for joining in the live chat today. Hope you're well. And regarding the lower piece, lower mark piece, there's some really nice nuggets in there about why these things are important for international students. So I encourage you, again, I post the links to these in the comments section on the Facebook page related to this video live chat. So I encourage you to check out those articles for a little bit more in depth on what's happening. The third article I'm talking today about is looking at one of the potential diamonds in the rough for international students, international student recruitment areas. And this comes out of a blog piece I ran into this past week from a colleague who their blog is entitled View from a Bridge. And it's one that I think covers a lot. Obviously covers it was a kind of takeoff on the Open Doors report, looking for some information, data mining there. Talks about some of the general flows that we mentioned over the last couple of weeks in this roundup, but it focuses on Kentucky, the state of Kentucky, which the majority of institutions in the state have had significant reductions in their international student populations. University of Kentucky down 6.4%. Western Kentucky, who's been really feeling it the last couple of years, was down another 27%. Murray State down another 20% as well. Louisville down 4% as well. Smaller numbers there, but the incredible bright spot on this chart just really jumps off the page and go, that can't be right. That's got to be an error. Is Campbellsville University in Kentucky? They have gone from 2016-17 to 2017-18 from 660 international students to 3,440, an over 400% increase in just 1 year. And you're going, wait a minute, that's got to be a typo. That's when you dig a little deeper into this article, It seems, it does show directly from iPets data, released in 2017, that the results of their international undergraduate, international population at Campbellsville is largely down to growth in graduate full-time and graduate part-time international students. And you think, okay, international grad part-time, that seems a little odd to be have such a large number. And I think their growth, 1,500 to 2,000 of their international students now, 2,000 of their 3,400 international students in the past year are now considered, are graduate part-time international students. So, and for those who are DSOs and recruiters, you might be wondering, okay, how are they doing this? What this does reveal, and this is something that is not just at Campbellsville, but also practiced at the University of Cumberland, is it is offered to it that 99%, this is from the VP of Enrollment Services at Campbellsville, 99% of the students in the course are natives of India, but live and work for a company based in the United States. And the course that they're promoting heavily to this demographic is a Master's of Science in Information Technology and Management, designed to allow international students to work full-time jobs while enrolled. And here's where we get into the gray area. And on first blush, you look at those numbers and you go, oh my goodness, this is really something. I can't imagine, why aren't more universities doing this? And I think this is the blog makes it out to be fairly benign in terms of the way this what this practice is allowing. And this is something that, to be honest with you, if I'm at Campbellsville, I'm a little concerned about how things are shaping up here, because this is actually sounds very, very maybe a reverse of what happened to a lot of these visa mills out in California. I'm not certainly not calling Campbellsville a visa mill, but the practice of how those institutions operated. We're talking about Northwest Polytechnic. We're talking about a couple of other universities that have since closed as a result of their practices. These were ASICS accredited schools, these vocational career development accreditors that approved these for-profit institutions like Northwest Poly and others in California, in Silicon Valley, that were basically used to, that it would enroll all these students, a lot of them from India, a lesser percentage from China, enroll all these international students and be basically storefront colleges that students never actually checked in at. This model at Campbellsville is not that. I'll give you that caveat, but it does basically enroll students part time and allow them to do CPT from the start, from their first day, while being enrolled in this program, and that can go on for as long as the students take to finish their degree. So what happens is these students who maybe have been on, been working on OPT for a period of time, need another degree, end up finding because the work time is about to end, authorized work time is about to end, they're looking for perhaps another degree. They know they're not going to get, if it's the same degree level as they already have, they're not going to get additional OPT time. But they are going to be able to potentially do CPT at some point during their studies, because that is allowed by the regulations currently. So, a couple of them are interviewed in a connected article that the students are saying, I have to be in college to take this job that I've just been offered. And so they're basically working full-time, but they're enrolled in school part-time and are doing curricular practical training through these colleges. The way Campbellsville justifies this is that they have students come at the beginning of each semester for a weekend. They have face-to-face time, which which is the minimum, I don't know if it's what the actual minimums are, but are the minimums that are required for required in order to not be considered online online degrees or online classes, you see a real muddying of the waters, and frankly, for a lot of institutions, I know this practice where you enroll students right away in this part-time study and allows them to be to work full-time. So they'd be on, still on an H, or excuse me, still on an F-1 visa, but are doing CPT from the first day that they're on that college campus. So that allows them to work full-time. So a previous institution I worked at, we had this situation where we would have students who were on OPT working at a bank in a city a couple hours away, would be enrolling in our MBA program and then doing CPT right away so they continue their work. There wasn't required, it wasn't a required or integral part of their curriculum. An internship course wasn't a part of that degree program. So that we shut that process down because it certainly didn't fit what students should be allowed to do in the interpretation of curricular practical training. This institution and perhaps others are in their desire to enroll students, boost their numbers, boost their bottom line. The degree costs are only $17,000 for these students apparently to come do these courses for that weekend at the beginning of each semester and then work full-time for the rest of the term. That is the model that's going forward with these two schools, Cumberland, University of Cumberland and Campbellsville University. So I think there's some real, maybe on face value, like, oh, okay, that seems like, it. Wow, they're really doing something novel and unique there. But in the end, this CPT piece is a real challenging one, and one that I think is a path that you need to be very, very circumspect about before you go down heavily. Is it a short-term fix? And certainly anytime your international population, particularly those that are only there at the beginning of each semester, that's not really contributing to your campus diversity. That's not, it's certainly helping your numbers, but that isn't the way forward, I think. And I certainly, looking, when you dig into to these numbers a little bit, you realize how that's happening is probably not the way most institutions would want it to happen. So, cautionary tale perhaps down the road, and I wonder what CBP, or not CBP, but ICE and the folks at DHS will have to say about that that kind of practice, about CPT and a full-time CPT while being enrolled part-time, so at a campus once weekend a month, or 1 weekend a semester. So very interesting moving forward. So keep one to keep your eye on. So I appreciate you sticking with me this week and for questions that you've had. Good to see some familiar faces there. Zanetta, thanks for joining again. And Adil, hey, haven't heard from you in a while. Glad you're well. Glad you're with us. I wanted to leave you with a couple of last links that will help you perhaps better connect with me at SMIE Consulting. Those would be our website, smieconsulting.org, and our podcast stream for those that might be looking to get an archive of this so that you can, while you're working out, listen to this podcast, or some of them are taking a walk, walking the dog, whatever it might be. Hopefully that might be of use to you as well. I'm putting the links to those, to both our website and also our newsletter. I'm putting those in the comments section on the Facebook page now. Certainly encourage you if you are looking to subscribe to the weekly podcast, get that on your podcast stream, whatever you're using, or you would like to subscribe to the newsletter. We have that information available as well, so I'll put that link in the comments section as well. So again, these are some interesting articles this week, and I hope that you have a chance to digest all of them a little bit more. There's a lot out there, and certainly we'll be keeping abreast of these topics and more as they develop. So thanks again for joining us today, and look forward to connecting you in the weeks to come. Take care.